So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this
and welcome to This Week in Wrestling Indies and International. And I'm Pete, I'm with Timothy. Timothy, what's going on, my friend?
Oh, same old, just, I don't know if you saw it, you probably did, but just saw the news, Dick Slater passing away just a little bit ago.
Yeah.
Today, so that's obviously a bummer, but, you know, Dick Slater, guy I've seen some of, I've liked what I've seen, so mostly WCW was all that I really saw him. Oh, I think maybe... Did he do some tagging in Japan?
Yes. I mean, in the 80s, for sure.
Yeah, I remember seeing a little bit of that, but not much. But not... You know, a guy who I always thought was pretty good, but not a guy who I thought was an all-time great. But, the you know, some of the stuff I'm seeing talking about him sounds that way.
Yeah, I have him... when I did my ballot, I had him in my top 100. And he was even known better as a great 70s worker, and there's not a whole lot of that out there on him. I mean, his Mid-South run was incredible. He had great matches with Butch Reed, Jake the Snake Roberts. He was in a lot of the Houston footage that Bruce Starr put on online when he launched the NWA On Demand service with him in Mid-South and then in San Antonio. Had a lot of good matches there versus Gino and Tully and the Mongolian Stomper. He's known for his big heydays being in Georgia, which there's not a whole lot of Omni footage, but, you know, they're sitting on it, and definitely in WWE land because they just... I mean, about a year or two ago, they released the last Battle of Atlanta, and then just today, they uploaded the rest of the card on their Vault service. Dick Slater didn't work that show or anything, but he had a big run in Georgia. He was always a good worker, always threw a great punch, could sell, knew how to tell a story. I've always been a big fan of him. He wasn't a great promo, but he was a solid promo. Him and Bob Orton formed a pretty good tag team. A legendary angle was them. It was Orton and Slater were the ones who originally pile drove, went after him, tried to collect the bounty on Ric Flair that set up Starrcade 83. So they were instrumental in the lead up of that for the Flair for the Gold, which was Flair winning a second world title, but it was really the title that really put Flair on the map as the guy, because his first run was, well, it wasn't a terrible first title run, but it wasn't like the legendary one, which the second one became, and then his third, fourth, fifth, and beyond, and becoming the legend of Ric Flair. So, Dick Slater, he was one of the good guys in wrestling, in the sense as in good workers. He had his demons, and I don't want to focus on that type of stuff because, you know, he passed away. So I'd rather focus on the good stuff I know about him and not the bad stuff. But yeah, Dick Slater, he had a cup of coffee in the WWF as the Rebel character. He obviously didn't get over because it definitely was way too Southern for the North American crowds.
Do you think the gimmick, that gimmick was too Southern, or do you think Dick Slater was
too Southern? I think the gimmick definitely was too Southern, but Dick Slater could have been too Southern for the WWF too. But we don't know. He wasn't the Rebel Dick Slater. He was the Rebel with the whole entire what encompasses that.
So it was
a cup of talk. Coffee didn't work. But he had some decent matches there. Not a whole lot because it wasn't very long, the run. But I can't remember off the top of my head because the run was so short. But I remember there were like one or two decent ones. But for footage collectors out there, it's definitely his Mid-South run, which is what stands out of his art of being where he sums up him being a great worker and stuff like that. So he'll be missed and stuff, but he'll live on along in footage. Next week I'm going to Action, so I'm excited about that. Excited about that card where they start off their tournament for their champion, and I know there's a Kane Justice Yay High match, and so there's Action always delivers. So I'm really, really excited about that. Seeing them live for the first time. We probably won't record that week because I'll be in Houston like Wednesday and Thursday. And then I fly out to Atlanta Friday, and then I'll be visiting with my family on Saturday, and then coming back Sunday. So, we probably won't drop anything the next week. I guess the Saudi Arabia deal is still on, or is that with the WWE?
Yeah, the last thing I heard, and it was reported on the Torch, Wade Keller, was that he was the one. I think he was the one who was first mentioning that they took the location off of the website. He pretty quickly got a response to the tweet from that directly from a WWE Twitter account saying that was an oversight and that it's still on for Saudi Arabia, and that now it's been updated to the website officially having the location back on it. So looks like it's on. There's still time for anything to change. Political pressure seems to be getting bigger and bigger. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's everywhere, and a lot of people are tying it to WWE, which is interesting. WWE seems to be the big kind of the major company that they reference still doing business in this situation happening. You get it because it's an easy joke for something like John Oliver, but then when you see serious news organizations also covering it, there's a link. Linda McMahon is in a cabinet position, but I think they call it a cabinet level executive.
She's in the circle for sure.
She's not just in the circle. She's officially a part of the administration in a way that's considered cabinet level, but not in a cabinet appointment, not considered part of the cabinet, but cabinet level. So that's pretty high. And so, you know, that link back to the WWE does make WWE a tasty target politically as well. It's interesting to think because people talk about WWE as being invincible and, things will never change and they're always going to be the top, but political scandal, I don't know, you know, is that enough to hurt them? And no matter how much money they have and no matter how much they're the big dog, I think political scandal, stuff like this coming out, more stuff coming out. I mean, Vince, even though with the stuff that we already know about the history of Vince, and like sexual impropriety, that's already out there, he's skated by during the Me Too kind of thing, so that shoe is still waiting to drop for something even bigger could possibly come out about him. So the Saudi Arabia thing is very, very interesting and obviously becoming big news, so we'll see. It could change at any minute. They could say that they're canceling the thing, and I wouldn't be shocked if they did.
Vince is that alpha who doesn't like to be told he can't do X, you know, when he wants to do it, and
that's true.
And this is going to become one of these ugly things because It's not a good picture for the WWF. I mean, WWE. It's a terrible, terrible light to be there. And you know what? You open up this light to them. Usually a lot more when you put a light on a corner sometimes, or put a light underneath a house. There's a lot more critters under there that can get exposed, and that's not really what something you want. I mean, this isn't the old, as Vince would say, old wrestling days. This is this is sports entertainment now, and they're a publicly traded company. They have people they answer to, and this is just one of those things, and it's the irony is, you know, they want to be looked at legit, but then they go ahead and do something like this. I mean, they're still carny as fuck in my book.
Right. I mean, that plays right into the, you know, sports entertainment thing. It's Vince always wants it his way, what's most beneficial for him. And the sports entertainment thing is, oh, we're not sports, we're entertainment. Oh, and then, but then when sports are really popular and it's live action is the only thing people want to watch. Oh, well, I mean, we're a sports-based product. Like, so it's about what's suitable for him at the time, what's best for them. And I just think, honestly, this is a bigger picture thing that maybe I'm the only one looking or seeing it or something like that. But I think it sends a really shitty message that might hurt a lot of the respectability of the company, in that, you know, Vince made such a big deal about SmackDown after 9/11. And being one of the first live
events SmackDown
to happen.
And not only was that, it was in Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
And it was spearheaded by Matt, I can't remember his real name, but it's Matrick Mack, who has been a sponsor of wrestling during the Paul Bosch era of wrestling for Houston wrestling.
Right.
So he goes back and is like a big time power player here in Houston. And a lot of that reason he's a big power player was because Paul Bosch supported him and actually gave him loans one time when behind the scenes when he was not the power player he once was and became a power player because of a Paul Bosch loan and because he was on Houston wrestling and became this cult following in Houston. And then the wrestling led him to be legitimized by going on to like Houston Rockets and Houston Astros and Houston Oilers. And then once Paul Bosch left, he was one of the big time sponsors for WWF, whenever they came to Houston. Yeah. But that's me bragging about Houston wrestling.
Yeah, no. And it's a good point, but because it also plays into the difference between where, just politically, where the country is. I mean, and kind of that side of the aisle, no matter what side you happen to be on, but like the right side of the aisle and kind of the respectability politics and culturally is acceptable, patriotism, all that stuff. Like the idea that WWE was first big show back after 9/11 and then going to be the first, you know, big American show in Saudi Arabia after this happening. And it just, like I said, it just shows how different society is, and how those things feel, you know. And it's coming from the same company that's part of the issues is, you know, again, this crazy person at the top who thinks the way that you were saying, he's going to do whatever the fuck he wants.
Yep. And I mean, he's obviously, you know, big Trump supporter. Not always, obviously, as wrestlers all skew different ways. So they've always been a political company, and you know, not to see this mess coming is almost like mind-boggling to me. It's just crazy. Anything else out there that's interesting you saw?
No. I mean, I think I saw this reported somewhere, so it's not insane to be saying out loud, but some kind of WWE Germany idea, I think I saw coming floating around, being reported. Okay. NXT Germany, similar to NXT UK, with a similar partnership between Progress and NXT UK and NXT Germany and WXW. which is very, very interesting to think about what that means, especially with the stuff Walter has set out in the public about how he felt about WWE and possibly ever going there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's running the show in WXW, so I don't know how valid that report was or whatever, but that's an interesting thing for me because WXW has been a promotion that I've really liked for the past couple of years. I think me and you both had WXW matches, match of the year. So, yeah.
I know I added my promotion of the year, I think, last year, too.
Right. And I, you know, I brought it up again after originally saying it just recently, but the idea that a company like WXW is the real threat to WWE moving forward, and now it sounds like they're under thumb, you know? So who's next? OTT maybe is the next one that'll end up on the radar somehow as they're...
Yeah, I mean, I guarantee Mexico is going to be in that...
Oh, yeah. There's going to be some kind of...
targeted. I'm sure Japan is going to be targeted because, you know what? They're coming into... Japan's coming to the U.S. They're going to be... Yeah, WWE is going to definitely set up a dojo in a performance center in Japan. You know, we'll see what happens, but yeah, it's all interesting the landscape changing and under Hunter, but you know, Vince still the man making all the calls. Right. So,
well, and that also plays into, you know, our reviewing tonight, bringing that up, that little bit of story, because we are going to be reviewing NXT UK for the first episode tonight. So.
Yep.
But yeah, it is ever evolving.
Yep. We'll get to it. And why don't we get into it right now? We'll start off with MLW Fusion episode 26. We got Brian Pillman Jr. versus, I don't even know who this was, Vandal Ortugan.
Yeah. Like Vladimir Ortugan. We've seen him a couple times on MLW. Yeah. He's the Turkish guy. He's a little bit more interesting, but I think this was the first time that I realized he's kind of a jobber for them, which I don't get completely because he doesn't have a terrible look, and he could have some charisma, but maybe they think they can rehab him later, or maybe they just don't care.
I think they don't care.
Yeah, which is...
I might be wrong.
No, you might be right. Yeah, I mean, we'll see.
I thought Pillman showed some charisma. Yeah. I mean, not some, but a lot of it, actually. So, you know, I think the guy has a future. I mean, it wasn't a blow-away match or anything. It was just okay to me. But I think that was the point. I think it was the point was to highlight him and try to get him over. And I think it did to that extent. Or any thoughts on the match?
Same. I felt in a different way, but I felt slightly more like vindicated after being shaky the past couple of weeks on my original kind of take on Brian Pillman when we saw him in Black Label Pro, that he seemed like a guy who could really put it together. And that was a match with Janela, and Janela's, you know, on a big upswing and was really hot and still was really hot up until his injury. So you could almost try to think like, oh, maybe that was only so good because of Janela. And Pillman seemed shaky the past couple of weeks to me, you know, not wrestling, which obviously is a lot different. But then seeing him here back in the ring, totally the kid's got it in the ring. And I could feel it here. Even when he's like finisher, and he did a couple other moves too that were similar, that were a little bit too indie, you know, that they just come across like the contrived indie stuff. Like it's a cross arm swinging neck breaker thing. It's like a variation on the Fox Catcher that AR Fox uses in Lucha Underground and other places a little bit, into like a swinging neck breaker. But he's able to pull that off in a way that comes across more polished and professional and not super indie, which not a lot of people are able to do. So. Good on that. I like that they gave the Vandal a little bit, just because of to me, Pillman Jr. is not a character that should be like a super just like dominant squash
world beater.
It doesn't work for his character, so I like that they added some wrinkle in there. Liked him working for the rising knee, kind of similar to the V trigger and the I can't remember what Kota Ibushi calls it, but the hold the double arms and do the upward knee. It's more like the Kota Ibushi knee, upward knee, but without holding the arms. I like that he worked for that in a way that, like I said, like I'm referencing that it's a finishing move or could be a finishing move for two top guys in New Japan, so you think maybe he's using it similarly as a finish. And then the fact that he actually worked for it, attempted it, tried to get it, and then finally got it made me think, oh, that's going to be the ending. And then I liked that it was the kick out because I was predicting that and based on the situation, and then it wasn't. It was good stuff. Like I said, I thought I felt slightly vindicated in saying that Brian Pillman's got something there. I think in ring he's great. The character stuff, even in this match, feels like he's going a little bit too far. trying to like manically laugh and center himself and like, you know, doing the little like I'm meditating thing and all that was a little bit too much. But Nuts and Bolts, he's got charisma, like you said, and he's pretty solid as a performer.
It looks like his gear has been upgraded too.
Yeah, for sure.
Then we got a Jimmy Uta versus El Hijo down at LA Park. I thought it was a fun match. There was some mistiming in it earlier, but overall, I thought it was fun. I was surprised they. I thought it was a weird pairing because I didn't think either one of them needed to lose here. Because, you know, LA Park, the Parks are challenging for the tag titles. And Yuta's in a program with Jason Cade, and he just got been beating that program. So unless they were going to blow off Yuta, but he got the win, and they get the loss to El Hijo LA Park, which just surprised me a little bit. What about you? What were you thinking?
Yeah, very similar. I kind of went into the match thinking that... I guess originally I was thinking that El Hijo de LA Park was being brought in with LA Park to kind of do a one for one, and you know, he's there, so he's going to take a loss while Park is going to get the victory, obviously, over one of their top guys, just to like kind of even that out. And also, probably because, you know, LA Park wants his son to be booked on the show. So the deal will be, you know, you get the big win then, but we get to beat your son. That was my original prediction. But then when they challenge for the tag titles and it's going to be more from El Hijo de Park, I thought, well, then, yeah, he can't lose to Jimmy Uta. So the finish felt like not – and really not in a good way. Like, it felt out of nowhere and, like, it wasn't built to in any way that made sense. The match was good, like you said, and there was some mistiming. But the guys matched up really well and delivered a little bit more interesting story to it than I expected. But – the finish was flat for me, like very flat.
Agreed. And then we get a Stokely Hathaway return, so that's good. I never knew he was gone because we weren't watching it when he was.
Exactly.
You know, so I think he's the best manager in wrestling. So to me, that can only help. You know.
Right. I was trying to remember. I'm like, the last time he came there was probably when he was using that other name in ROH, which that I can't even remember at this point.
Yeah. Then we got a filthy Tom Lawler, and of course he smashes it again, wondering where Shane is for his interview. I thought that was good. It worked for me. What about you?
Yeah, Lawler is, I mean, repeatedly continues being great. So, I mean, he's just back at it here.
We get a Rich Swann interview. This is, didn't really do anything for me. Again, it's that the whole indie vibe where none of them really know how to cut a promo. And I felt like this was one of them. It wasn't terrible, but he has those 80s style glasses, and he didn't come across as a star to me. What about you? What were your thoughts?
No, it felt like they're just allowed to play around, and like you're talking with indie guys who don't know how to talk, and it's not just that they don't know how to talk. Some of them like
don't know how to present themselves either.
Yeah, they're left to their own worst devices and think it's fun to just mess around when they don't realize that this is about getting over.
Yeah. Exactly. Then we get Teddy Hart versus Rich Swann. This was an interesting match. I overall enjoyed it, but the crowd got me angry because you're cheering for Teddy, who's a heel, but they're cheering for him, so they're making him a baby face, and Teddy's, of course, playing up being a baby face because that's what Teddy does. I enjoyed Teddy's heat. Or would it be Shine because he's a baby face? I don't know. The big miss sets up a Swann's comeback, but they keep on cutting him off. I thought the psychology was a mess because of what the crowd was doing to it. So, I mean, I was all over the board on this. Like, parts of it I enjoyed. I thought Teddy used that, was it the lumbar check, way too much. Is that when he does the double knees to the back, that's the lumbar check?
He did different variations, but it's, like, very similar to that, yeah.
So, I mean, it's like, I think he should use Swann, move up his offense a little bit, like, change it up a little bit. But everything he did looked good and crisp for the most part. I thought the psychology was a mess because of the crowd and and all this, and they're portraying the I mean, MLW's portraying Teddy as a heel, Crush treating him like a babyface, they're treating Swan like a babyface, the MLW, but the crowd is really just doesn't give a shit about him in comparison to Teddy Hart, so he comes across as like second thought, and so overall then the match becomes a mess because of all this stuff. What about you? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it was it's interesting in a lot of ways. I mentioned it before in the Teddy match, but with so much stuff like the lumbar check style finish, like moves where he's working over the back a bunch, and like it's impressive that he's able to do so much so many moves targeting the back but still feel like he has no focus.
Yeah.
It just doesn't play into anything. Swan did a good job really trying to hype that up and sell the back.
Yeah.
Which I thought was done well, but the crowd doesn't care and they didn't get into it, like you said. The act as a whole, I think, took up too much time on the show. I don't think you should have had the Pillman match and the Teddy match on the same show, just because then you're getting so much of the Heart, the whatever they're calling it,
yeah,
the Heart Foundation thing in one show. That was too much. And then there is something about Teddy, the way Teddy works, that I kind of realized in this match. When you talk about the lack of focus, it's kind of, in some ways, kind of similar to the same philosophy that Chris Hero was using on his like epic 2016 year. But done in a way where he misses the in between the notes stuff that was the magic of Chris Hero doing it.
Yeah.
That got you sucked into the match and actually into it. And he's just kind of like, again, feels like he's going through the motions during it. So he's doing like a big spot and then slowing down, kind of stalking Swan, sometimes playing with the crowd and doing other stuff. And that was really Hero's MO. It was like very few spots interspersed with, like, you know, that kind of stuff, stalking and, you know, thinking that he's building into stuff and maybe messing with, like, playing with the crowd a little bit, but not taking his focus off of the game. And Hero's commitment to, like, the match and to telling a story and doing everything made it great. And Teddy here doing a similar style where it's slowed down and that's, he's just hitting big moves with the little bit of stuff in between. Because he didn't feel as invested or into it at all, get me invested, it's just so fucking boring. And it's crazy because he's like doing all this spots and all this crazy moves, and it's literally like just the most boring match on the show. So yeah, that was kind of my thoughts on the thing. Swan's weird right now because he was a guy who had an indie pedigree. He was a guy that you'd have expected could have gone back to the indies and worked in the big name places, and be, you know, doing like similar to what Austin Aries is doing. But instead, he feels like he's doing the like washed up WWE guy run where you do like the big places where you'll get paid a bunch of money first and then move around. And I guess it's probably connected somewhat, like he's doing more of the Ryback style. And I guess maybe some of it has to do with the reason why he lost his job, obviously. A lot of those, you know, high name indie places are not as enthused to probably bring him around anymore.
That could be. On that note, man, I thought this was like a throwaway episode completely. It did nothing for me. What about you?
Yeah, but in some ways I liked it more than I've liked any episodes recently. But it still is like I don't care about MLW. And the reason why I liked it is just because Pillman Jr. being promising and then Filthy Tom promos and stuff. But like still, yeah, it's like I kind of want to see where that ends up with Brian Pillman and that and Tom a little bit. But everything, like, I just don't care about anything else on the show.
Yeah, but I will say I'm excited about Tom and Strickland next week.
Yeah, yeah. But that was weird, too, because they're fighting over who's the ace of MLW, but then at the same time, they're also hyping that Strickland has a title match coming up.
Yeah, so and Filthy Tom's the number one contender.
Yeah, it's very confusing.
Yeah, so, like, that is just a bad... It's just, you know, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, again, that's them being dumb on their booking.
Right, but the them two wrestling is going to be great.
Yep. Well, we're going to switch over to the UK, and we're going to look at the new NXT UK that debuted on the network. This was interesting. I thought it had a nice look to it. But again, it does feel very NXT by the numbers. But it's debuting, so there were some little differences. Like, we're getting some packages on the wrestlers. You know, but it was mostly wrestling. It was geared mostly, I would say about 80% of it was in ring. And that's what it needs to be right off the bat, because you're trying to develop these characters and establish it. So I mean, I still enjoyed it overall, but it's some of the characters you just got to get used to, and some of them you're like, you know, some of the booking is going to probably look a little weird. Like, I was a little shocked that Coffee went over Andrews in the opening match.
Yeah, me too.
But I get it. They're trying to set up tag teams for the tag team tournament. And obviously the Coffee Brothers are going to be one of them.
Yeah.
Now I guess Andrews and Flash Morgan is going to be a tag team. So those are the things you're like, why would you beat Joe Coffee? Is a pretty generic. He's an okay worker. You know, generic charisma. But he got the win because they're trying to. Because they needed to set up a tag partner for Andrews, so we're going to see a lot of that in the earlier stages to set up for the tag tournament that they promised later on. So there's going to be a lot of weird things going on that we might question off the bat. But I mean, for right now, it makes sense. Like, yeah, they got to put tag teams together for a UK tag tournament, right?
Yeah, exactly. But it's, I mean, yeah, and it's hard for me watching it because it's like. They reference some things that are from the real world, from the already existing indie UK scene, like the idea that Mustache Mountain is this established tag team.
Yeah.
I mean, they have won the NXT tag team title, so you have that going, but otherwise...
And they've been on NXT television, so that helps too.
Right, but then the other side of it is it's like you've got Morgan Webster coming out here to save Mandrews, and they're going to put together them as a tag team, but you've got all over the place, everyone knows that, you know, Morgan Webster tags primarily with Boar, and he's like this heel tag team. And you would think that you would just do that because that's already established in the same kind of region. And you've got pretty much the rights to all that. They show Boar in the, you know, package in the opening. So it's like, just lean in but you're right. If you think about it, probably more intelligently from them as a brand, they're establishing their own brand with their own rules. And so things aren't just going to be exactly the same as every other indie company in the UK. And either the other companies are going to have to just deal with trying to match up with NXT because that's what everyone's going to watch. Or it's just going to, like, you know, they're going to butt heads and end up with a lot of weird, awkward feeling booking because so many people are invested in what these characters are in NXT. If a lot of them are continuing to be allowed to work other places, we'll see what ends up happening with that as well.
Yeah, Vince has always been a guy who likes to create his own his own story. Like, even legendary as Cactus Jack and Vader were trying to do a program for Mania based off Cactus losing his ear in WCW. But Vince wanted to create his own history in WWF and not do it based on a history of a different company. And then when that ends up happening is they end up being a tag team in Mania. So that's how, you know, it all gets all convoluted when you try to create your own history real quick instead of, you know, because, yeah, the Vader Cactus stuff took years to develop, tell that story. But anyway, it opens up with Mark Andrews with Joe Coffey. You know, Andrews is a really good baby face. Coffee's a solid heel, like I said, but he's a tad vanilla. I was like, again, I scratched my head, like, why are they beating Andrews here? He's clearly an over baby face to a guy in a tag team. And because later on they are setting up a tag tournament for the UK tag belts. And then I thought, oh, maybe they're just trying to set up a feud with Webster and Andrews versus the Coffees, but it's mainly because of the tournament. I thought it was a good, solid match. I thought Andrews is really good here. What were your thoughts there, Tim?
Yeah, I echo everything you say about the match. And the most important, I feel like we already talked about the most important thing, which was the post-match angle, really. And then this match, and then there's some more stuff throughout where I realized that like the ICW side of the, you know, NXT relationship is still strong, and that you forget about it, or at least I forget about it, and I think everyone in our circles forgets about it, because I don't know anybody who cares about ICW and follows it, really. It's mm-hmm. a very niche and insular kind of company. It feels like it's not super popular on the internet, but is popular in the region. And it looks like NXT UK plans to still go with those guys that they got from the relationship with ICW. You got the Coffee Brothers. Noam Dar is another one that's kind of related to that. So, yeah, it does feel like Dave Mastiff worked both, but also was very popular in ICW. So, yeah, this kind of made that glaring. Oh, yeah, I forgot that whole side of this thing as well. So it's not going to just be Progress, you know, run by WWE.
Agreed. Then we get an Eddie Dennis vignette. These are so necessary right now.
Yeah.
Though the closing line was just kind of lame on what Eddie Dennis said about we tell a lot of stories, and I have a lot of stories to tell. That was just lame as shit. But these vignettes are so necessary to get the talent over to. A lot of the audience, honestly, when you think about it, aren't like hardcore wrestling fans. They're trying to get this. They want more than hardcore wrestling fans watching NXT UK. They want it. They want to get it. Of course, they want to build a big audience on it. So these vignettes are necessary to get over the talent with the average viewer. What are your thoughts on the vignette?
Yeah, I thought the vignette was great. I thought, like you said, it felt reminiscent of stuff that they do in NXT regular, but it had its own kind of feel. And I get where you're coming from, because I thought that the closing line could be considered a little bit too inside.
Yeah.
But I thought that they covered it up in a way to where I think it played for me. You know, because the way he sets it up is saying that, you know, when they started out wrestling, the whole point was just who has the best story to tell. You know, in a way that you could say, like, we were just trying to go out and have fun, and then, like, later on when you're reminiscing, what was the best story that you tell when you're sitting around drinking about stuff that you did out when you were wrestling. So then him closing it out saying, I've got some stories to tell, it felt like a hint to, you know, I've got this history with these established stars already, and, you know, maybe I've got some beef or something from the past to bring up between us to get me interested, to mean, like, he's going to be catapulted to that level, or is it going to be like some drama and he's going to bring in some weird past history about stuff that they did in the past that wasn't cool, and not just about him having grudges with them or whatever. So I thought that was kind of a good thing, but then also being, like you said, winking a nod to Smart Fan about, like, the idea of telling stories in a match, you know? So I kind of liked it.
Okay, well, I hated it.
Then
we get the Mustache Man and come out, and they're cutting a promo, and they're freaking over, like, Grover. It was almost hard for them to even get over what they needed to do, because the crowd was so into them and chanting for them. But I mean, that's good. It's good to have an overact, and you know, part of me wants to say you should make them the tag champs, but you know, the other part of me is like, man, maybe you want to prostitute them being over and try to establish another team off the bat. So I don't know, but either way, I thought this was. They're obviously clearly the most overact on the show.
Well, you look
and
at
all
the
they did was talk.
Yeah, look at the recent history with them establishing new titles, and what you're talking about not giving the belt to the clear winners has kind of been the status quo. Even with the Adam Cole win of the U.S. title, like I talked about, that it's gone to Ricochet so quick. I mean, he didn't feel like the winner, the pick to win it. It really felt like Ricochet was the one to win it, and now he has it. So it seems like that's been their model. Give it to someone that you don't expect, and then give it to the guy that you expect a little bit later. Same that they did with the UK title. So I could see them doing that with Mustache Mountain there, and it'd probably be smart, you know, like you said, for establishing the division. One thing
they're so over where you I don't think you can hurt them, honestly. Right. They're almost bulletproof.
One thing I found interesting was Trent Seven is like, just feels like the Triple H of this whole scene. Not just in the wrestling ring and the promo, but also like the political maneuvering in the back, you know, like the way he delivered, this is our brand. He feels he's delivering the Triple H NXT rah-rah lines. And then I was listening to Flash Morgan Webster's recent interview with Jordan Devlin on his podcast, and they're talking about Devlin and Seven having a match in the past, and Webster just regales with the fact that Trent Seven is the person that he's seen who loves wrestling more than anyone he's ever seen in his entire life. This is a guy who's been backyard wrestling since he was 16, and his entire life has always been wrestling, and friends and acquaintances with other sycophantic wrestling obsessives. And he says Trent Seven is the biggest wrestling, you know, lover that he's ever seen in his whole life. So it's just like, man, is Seven already getting the political swagger where he's got guys kissing up to him on their podcasts? You know, it's like, geez, this guy is just, he's so Triple H, man.
Oh, man. Oh, gosh. Then we get a Dave Mastiff vignette. And then he wrestles Sid Scale or whatever. And Mastiff is over huge here, too. That's the difference between the two shows, man. The UK crowd was much hotter than the Florida crowd. Man, yeah, Mastiff looked. Came over and looked. He looked like a star here, man. Looked fantastic.
Yeah, that really helped.
Instantly over.
The crowd really helped him here, and
yeah,
and he was good. He reminded me more of the Mastiff that I used to really like.
Yeah,
big ass.
He got rid of the comedy shtick. Yeah, this is Mastiff being a big monster.
So hopefully he's, you know, keeping himself in good shape and works hard, because I think he could, you know, soar to the top. Right now, guys like him are real popular. You know, we talk about it with NXT, but Lars Sullivan, you know, Keith Lee, those guys get over huge right now. So I think Mastiff could easily be a big-time breakout star in here.
Yep. And then we get a Nina Samuels interview. I thought she was good here. What about you?
Yeah, the interview was solid, and you know, playing into the match. I've liked her work recently, so... and I thought she was really good here, too.
I agree. I enjoyed the match. I got more out of Samuel than I did Toni Storm. And don't get me wrong. I mean, Toni Storm is fantastic. But I liked Samuels as a heel here. I liked her character. I liked her mannerisms. I liked her work in the crowd. I thought she carried her into the match really good. And I was really impressed overall. What about you?
Yeah, she's always been someone who has a good mix of poise and presentation, but also being, I mean, she's a little bit bigger, she's got some size, so realistically in a lot of ways she comes across probably not as good of a character worker as, like, say Jenny in the UK scene, but a
right.
kind of a better adaptation of that style, or having that style as a wrestler, because I like Jenny a lot, but her playing, you know, pseudo Jimmy Havoc while being like a toothpick always didn't play well with me, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so Samuels is, I mean, you know, they're different style workers in their moves, but the poise and presentation is there, and Samuels is putting it together really solidly. I've only seen her be very good as a heel, and when she's clearly a heel. Babyface, she a lot of times doesn't come across, she doesn't really leap off the page, but this match she did really well with Toni Storm.
And then we get Dunn defending the UK Championship on the inaugural show. Versus Noam Dar. This is interesting. You know, we see Dar early on doing some of his goofy shit. And I wouldn't call it goofy, but it was just, you know, having fun type stuff. I really enjoyed when Pete goes to do his little, his token flip out of the corner. And Dar cuts him off and clips him on the top rope. I really liked that, how it set up the heat. And then Dar's working the... working the leg, so I enjoyed that. And then it was Pete Dunne to take over, and I enjoyed all that. So I thought they had a pretty good match. I don't know if they needed to have a blowaway match, but this is pretty damn good. I'll say that. What about you? What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, I'm very similar. It's funny that you mentioned, you know, kind of Dar's attitude and messing around in the beginning, just because he's so young and comes across so young still, to where like that kind of idea that he plays around a bit has always, it's been part of his character. And it's so funny to think that he's kind of the Peter Pan while Pete's the opposite, because Pete's actually a year younger than Dar right now. But Pete comes across like a grizzled old vet almost at this point, while Dar's been, I mean, wrestling probably longer, because Dar's been wrestling forever. Although probably close to the same, I mean, Dar is a year older, but probably very close to the same amount of time. But in that time, Dunn comes across like a grizzled vet, and Dar still comes across like, you know, youthful rookie who could still someday put it together. Like he feels like he's still picking up the pieces, or putting together the pieces, I guess. So I don't know if that necessarily hurt this match, the kind of that dynamic with Dar, but it does. I don't know. Big title matches for me with Dar have never been good, I haven't seen him have a lot of really good big title matches. He can have good matches and even good matches that are long and kind of epic, but I never, again, it plays into that idea. Like, he doesn't come across like he takes it super seriously all the time, and it makes it so I don't buy into epicness of a big title match from him as much, because it doesn't feel like it matters that much to him. But Dunn was really good here. That trip up spot that you talked about was great. Like, it was probably one of my favorite things in the match. That was kind of my takeaway here. I don't know if the match was good enough for the big main event on the first show, but also maybe you want to set the bar more attainable, I guess, that, like, this is the level of match that you can expect as the main event, you know?
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. And, I think in the WWE speak, I think they use Noam Dar because, hey, he's been on 205, blah, blah, blah. So I think they felt they are putting their biggest star against Pete Dunne in a way. But in the reality, that's not the case at all, you know?
No. I can see that. And I did like the fact that they had the justification that he won the number one contendership on that show from months ago.
Yeah, they had to play it because most people wouldn't remember that shit at all.
Right.
Because so much stuff transpires in wrestling.
But it does make it feel less haphazard, the idea that, like, WWE is just flying by the seat of their pants with this thing, because it feels like, oh, well, they had that number one contenders match so that they could have a contender for the first episode of the show. They were planning this all along. When, realistically, that cannot be true.
Right. Well, let's move gears. Overall, I thought it was a solid inaugural show, though, you know? What about you?
Yeah, I was more excited about it than I have been about NXT sometimes recently, so that was good. And I think coming out of it, I'm looking forward to seeing more.
Okay. And then we go into the proper NXT. And right off the bat, we get the Undisputed Era versus... the War Raiders. And, man, I don't know. This whole War Raiders thing, it almost feels like they've gone a little too over the top with it.
Yes.
To where it's just like, God, I don't know what it is. But I thought they had a solid match. I enjoyed them working over Rose's leg. I liked Rose facing peril work. I love Ro when he did the STO, but he still sold it. There's a lot to like here, but I didn't feel like, you know, I don't know, man. I don't think you want to see the War Raiders sell that much, tell you the truth. It's kind of like the Road Warriors. You want to see them on offense kicking ass, and that's what you want to see out of the War Raiders. And we didn't get that much. I think a funner match would have been, I mean, I think if they're going to use this finish, I think you want to make, and I don't think you made the War Raiders that much stronger. I don't think they came out of this looking stronger with this finish. You're going to do that, you might as well just cut an 8-minute War Raiders kicking the shit out of them, and then Bobby Fish comes in for the fucking DQ.
Yeah.
Why do this, like, 15, 20-minute match with fucking Rose selling for more than half of it? I don't know. I scratched my head. At the point, if you weren't going to do a title change, the point would be to get War Raiders over more. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that happened at all.
It definitely is impossible to get the first title challenge back.
Yeah.
And now this is what you did. And even if you think that finish protects them, I'm 100% with you. The lasting memory is what actually happened in the match. And what happened in the match was Ray Rowe got his ass kicked for way too long.
Yeah.
And Ray Rowe's the ass kicker of his team. Like,
yeah.
I would have been more okay with Hansen selling. It feels like someone just said the big one probably shouldn't sell as much, you know? Like, they don't know, they don't know the team. But Rowe's the heater. Like, I don't want the heater being the one who gets his ass kicked the whole time.
Yeah. Hansen's like the lightning. Where it's like, ooh. But fucking, you know, but Ro is the guy who really legitimately is the one who Hanson has a couple token spots, but it's fucking Rose the one who brings the fucking thunder.
Yeah, and I mean, there's a reason why, and you know, the report that I heard going around, I think everyone did, was that Rowe held out and didn't go to NXT by himself. And there's a reason why they were interested in taking him by himself, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to say it because I like Hanson, but Rowe is much better.
Yeah.
And yeah, so then he's the guy who's getting his ass kicked the whole time. And I just think, like, fuck, it's his their first title shot, and this is what happens. I'm with you. And I actually kind of liked some stuff. I thought, I'm with you, like, I thought it should have been an ass kicking. And then when it was, when I saw that they were going to get a heat, some heat, I loved that Rowe really fought. Like, the first quick tag, Rowe didn't just, like, go, you know, now you guys are beating me up. He was fighting both of them off real good, and he kept fighting throughout in a good way, but then it just kept going. Like, it kept going. It was like, this is good. I like this. He's still fighting. He's looking. And then it gets to the, finally, it just keeps going to the point where he's worn down and just is getting destroyed. And I'm like, Jesus, this should have been done a while ago.
Yeah.
And I never thought I would fucking say this because of, we were reviewing ROH around the time that this hit the peak of its insanity, but I would have loved a War Machines, War Raiders, you know, brawl to a DQ here.
Yeah.
They're kind of fucking special that they did in ROH all the time. Even yeah. if you want Bobby Fish to come in and get involved too, but yeah, just brawl, just have exactly what you said, just brawl and brawl. It's fucking wild, big fight where they don't sell at all. They're just kicking the shit out of each other. And then, yeah, then Fish can get involved, or you can just call for the DQ like they did constantly. And it's just so funny because I was so sick of that because they did it so much in ROH, but
yeah,
maybe it was right because instead of that they did this, and this is so much worse. So yeah,
I think the reason they didn't Ring of Honor is because they didn't want to beat any of the other team. I mean, it right. was like they wanted to push them, but they didn't want to push them. It was like that kissing cousins type of push.
Right. Yeah, and I think and if you yeah. did it here, it could have worked, you know. But
yeah,
they just did it to ad nauseum in ROH.
Yeah, and here, yeah, this it actually they you know, Bret Hart would say, you know, wrestle me, you go into the match at a 5, you come out as an 8. Here, I think coming into the match, the War Raiders were a 7. I think they came out of it as a 5.
Yeah,
it didn't really work here. Shayna Baszler versus Britt Baker. I love this. I love them doing this. All this does is put heat on Baszler and it makes her more of a badass. I love this. What about you?
Yeah, this was great.
I love the fact that she fucked up Britt's arm. I mean, that's
yeah.
all there is to it. Simple angle, but God, you can get so much more mileage out of this than other shit, you know?
Yeah, this was fantastic. Well done. You wouldn't have predicted it, and it was perfect. Britt looked good in there for when she was in there, so
yeah,
you know, that was fine. But yeah, the angle, the story is so good, and you know, icing on the cake, obviously Shayna doesn't just let it go. She has to run in and hit one more big knee strike before she goes. She's almost putting the wounded animal out of its misery, you know.
I loved her. I mean, that's why, I mean, she's one of my favorite acts in NXT, and because the booking on her is so simple, it's hard to fuck it up, and right. They really haven't. They've done a good job with this.
Yeah, and I would say that you're right. I think that she's kind of unfuck-upable, you know, unless you try yes. to give her too much. Or
make her babyface, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But as a heel, it's like, just let her do her thing, and it works. Cause...
Yeah, she's a badass heel, you know. She's a Hell's Angel. She's really not a gimmick. She's really not this badass, but she's a gimmick in that sense. But she's not, you know,
right.
Lacey Evans. Then we get a Birch and Lurkin video package. I'm glad to add them into the mix, especially after you freaking devalued Roar Raiders. So I'm more at this point, I need another challenger for Undisputed Era. And they end up beating their team of, who do they end up wrestling?
Tien Bing and Rocky, which I...
Yeah, any, I didn't really have any thoughts here. I just, you
no.
know...
No, it was... I mean, it was good. It was not what we were getting before the injury from Oni, but it was not bad.
Right.
We'll see if he knocks off some ring rust or if he slows down now. Who knows what's going on. But yeah, the match was mostly fine. You're talking about it, developing tag teams, having tag teams. I mean, this is a team that could be in that UK tag tournament at least.
Yeah.
You know? Just have a match or two. They don't have to go far, but I think they fit right in. You know,
yeah, they don't even have to go far. Maybe go win the first round, lose the second round, and help establish a team.
Exactly. Yes.
One of the good teams. Yeah. they're used to laying down on their shoulders anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Then we get, holy crap, Nikki Cross, Bianca Belair. I thought this was a hell of a fight. I absolutely love this match. And it was simple as hell. The presentation was simple. And it was, I thought they, these girls, I thought Nikki did a really good job of, I hate to say it, but I felt she carried Bianca in some spots, but I thought this was a hellacious fight. It was all action, all energy. You got over that these girls don't like each other. Nikki Cross was insane. And then we get the post-match, or Aleister Black's out because he wants answers. So we get a non-finish that works here. But God, I just absolutely loved the dynamic between Bianca and Nikki Cross, because it's worked so much different than most female matches or most matches in general, where it had a chaotic feel to it, but not over the top, or you don't need. You know, they didn't use any weapons, but it still had plenty of chaos to it, which I loved. What were your thoughts here?
Yeah, and to me it had a really cool vibe that, like, is reminiscent of something that has deep history in wrestling, but it's kind of the jock versus the freak, you know? You got the kind of natural athlete in Bianca Belair, who's, like, honed to the top of the, you know, of her ability, and then you've got Nikki Cross, who's the kind of crazy girl who doesn't feel pain. And comparatively, it's like a feud that was very similar to that and also had very good matches, was The Rock and Mankind. Yeah. You know, and when you talk about carrying her, I mean, it's there because Bianca Belair is not, that's not really completely a gimmick with her. She is kind of a raw athlete still, who's just very, very athletic and can do a bunch of cool stuff, but isn't necessarily there in the wrestling. So the story wrinkles that Nikki weaves into the match by way of the character that she is comparatively, it does feel like she's driving the match for the story in that way, which, I mean, obviously probably in a lot of ways she is too, because she's the veteran. But yeah, I mean, the dynamic is great. It is in a lot of ways similar to that Rock Mankind feud, that they're, like, just kind of really taking it to each other in a big time fight. You feel like the mean streak of the natural athlete comes out against this opponent who's kind of just willing to kind of put their body on the line and do all this crazy stuff. A lot of fun. My only issue with the finish, and I totally get it just because of the positioning and everything, but I just don't necessarily know that you needed to, after this really cool match that helped get both over, really treat Bianca Belair like she's just kind of completely subservient to the Aleister Black storyline, in the fact that the lights go out and she's just completely gone and he's there. And I don't know if that was necessary. Right. I get that you want to have it come down to, you know, it's Black and Cross because of that's the storyline that you're going, and, you know, Aleister Black is important. But I don't know that this was the time to treat her as if she's, like, well, obviously she'll never be as big of a star as him, and she doesn't even matter enough to where she can just disappear so that he can do his thing. And that, I thought, was not necessary after a match that could have helped to get her over in a lot of ways.
That's fair. And, you know, I felt like the biggest difference between the two shows, I felt, was the audience was way hotter for the UK show.
Yeah, and better. I mean, in a lot of ways. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, very hot, very into it. I guess the one thing we're kind of glazing over here, though, is what did you think about Aleister Black's acting at the very end of the show? Because for me, it was too much. Did you like it? Because, yeah, I don't know that he needed to, like, convulse.
Oh, yeah, I'm totally, yeah. It was like, what? Yeah.
Yeah, that was a little bit too much for me. But yeah, I thought this is an interesting 1-2 combo, watching these two together now. Both these two shows. So we'll see how this goes moving forward.
Well, why don't you check out ProWrestlingOnly.com to explore other podcasts, along with match reviews, features and retrospectives, reviews of wrestling books, video games and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances and non-wrestling TV shows, and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by signing up at PWO Forums. We've been online for over a decade, and with over 2,000 registered members and an active archive of over 4 million threads, our message board is a vibrant community all its own. Whether you want to talk about a specific match in our match discussion archive, take a deep dive in the Mike Squad Forum, or discuss more general topics from wrestling past and present, check out all this and more at www.prowrestlingonly.com. And we're back, and we're looking at New Japan Pro Wrestling, King of Pro Wrestling, that has happened like in the last 10 days or so. You know, the wrestling was there, and it was so-so to me. But my God, they took some chances in the booking. Huh.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, you mentioned the wrestling was there, but I don't have much to say or didn't care that much about the undercard. But the when you talk about the wrestling, the matches were better than they had been than the probably since, like, you know, when New Japan was really getting into the doldrums of boring, where it's just all these multi-man matches that feel like they don't matter. But these still feel like they don't matter, but at least they're, like, kind of good. They are taking big risks in booking. They're very clearly trying to reestablish themselves after the Exodus, where I think that they had some band-aids that they put on, but now they're looking to, you know, take off the patches and replace everything and really get everything running the way that they want it. So, yeah, they're making some big booking changes or big booking switches.
Yeah, one of the big things I thought was how they aligned Okada and Tanahashi. That's kind of similar to, like, Ric Flair and Rick Steamboat in the 80s when they had been feuding for so long, and then they'd, you know, then they'd be baby faces together for a bit and they team together, and they draw big houses together. So I'm expecting whenever they do formally get that team in place, it should draw a huge house. The only thing is, I mean, I guess they definitely put the heat on Tama Tonga's Bullet Club, and they moved Jay White into that crew. But the thing is, still out of that group, man, there's not an ace out of that group, huh?
Yeah, not to us, but I think that it's Jay White.
Yeah, I know it's going to be Jay White. Yeah. I mean, I just don't think he's ready for it. We'll see. Well, maybe he'll become Kenny Omega and break out.
Yeah, it seems like a rush, but also at the same time, before he came back as the Knife Pervert, he was really having some good matches. So, like,
right.
The wrestling is there, and the rest of it seems to be coming together. I hate to even say anything good about him, because it feels like admitting that Joe Lanza was right and that he was good. But, like, I'm not as dire. Like, I think he can put it together. If they start letting him wrestle more, which, I mean, he had a pretty good match.
I mean, I love Jay White as a young boy. I thought he was going to be the new Finn Balor.
Yeah, but what they're doing with him is really interesting. Yeah, I don't think he's there yet as the ace, and I think that it does hurt that Bullet Club OG's group a lot, that it doesn't feel like they have a clear top guy in the group, you know?
And then you wonder, okay, so the money, a money feud is when they team together. I mean, maybe give them a run with the tag belts.
Yeah, I wouldn't be mad about that. That could be a lot
different.
Of fun.
Shake something up for a bit, you know, because you still have the Omega group on top. So, I mean, I found that interesting. I thought that was a big, big, big angle change. And then you put Gato and Jado and Jado, whatever, in Bullet Club. OG, whatever the hell it's called. It definitely put the promotion, put them on. And you know, props to New Japan for doing it, going out and trying something different. But because of all this, a lot of the finishes and a lot of the booking felt very WWE in a way, because of the storytelling they were doing here. Would you agree or disagree on that?
No, that's definitely true. There is a lot more sports entertainment vibe in New Japan, but there has been for a while. But it's really getting there, especially stuff that feels like desperate finishes.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's a lot of interesting stuff. We got debuts with Shingo. What type of impact do you think Shingo will have on the roster?
That's tough. I mean, my line when we were talking about it was, I was like, Shingo wouldn't be the LIJ guy, because he's basically just like a better version of Evil. And he is. So, like, it feels weird about where is Evil going to go now. That's, like, the big... that's, like, the first line. What it, how does Shingo affect the roster? The second line is, I mean, hopefully they're positioning him as a heavyweight. Because him and G1 could be a lot of fun after the crazy champion carnival he had last year. Mixing it up with guys like Goto. He could have some great matches. Shingo and Fale would even be a lot of fun for me. So, yeah, like, I think... I don't know how big his impact can really be, honestly. Because he's one of the best heels in wrestling, and especially in Japan. But I don't know if his size hurts him in New Japan. And if they really care about having big-time heels that are, like, his style of heel. It's going to have a lot to do with... Or it's going to really come down to how he does in ring, I think. But at the same time, New Japan has really shown that, like, you can't get above your station. I don't think you really can, like, if they have a plan for the way that they're going to book you, which this is also like WWE, I mean, they're just going to do it. And they just make it work. And you can't, like, guys, Shibata, I mean, God, it felt like Shibata was so over, he should have done something.
It felt like every show he was about to have his breakout.
And and just never got it. So I think Shingo could be, I think Shingo could end up very comfortably somewhere between Goto and Shibata, or he could also be like a top level guy. It just depends on the booking, I guess, which is going to be interesting to see what they
do. Yeah, another guy, Hanma, always felt like he was about to break out too, you know?
Right.
We got the angle with Jericho attacking Evil to set up Zack Sabre Jr. beating him, or, you know, no finish, whatever you want to call it. Do you think the payoff is Evil getting to actually get a pin on Jericho and elevating him?
I would hope, but people are talking about that they're probably going back to Jericho and Naito. So
I don't think
Evil beats Jericho for then Jericho to go to Naito, you know? That doesn't make sense to me.
Because for me, I always thought Evil reminded me of Hashimoto. So and so I thought, okay, maybe if he beats Jericho, that'd be like his crowning moment, and that's where he gets his Hashimoto level push. But if he doesn't beat Jericho, I mean, it doesn't hurt him, but he won't ever become Hashimoto, though.
Well,
and they might not have plans for him on that either. Right.
He could. I mean, I just said, you know, Shingo kind of fits the same role as Evil in that group, and maybe this beating Jericho could be a springboard into Evil getting pushed to a level where he's not just an LIJ guy. And he moves somewhere else because you already got a guy basically serving his role in the group. I don't know. I mean, that is possible. And then that would still make sense or be logical that somehow Jericho could get back to Naito after that, because it would make a little bit more sense. You could play in an angle or involve it some way like that. Or just the fact that he's not moving from, like, the lower henchman in a loss up to the big boss of the group. But...
Right.
That'll have to be seen.
All right, well, let's get into the matches. We open up with Liger and Tiger Mask versus Desperado and Kanemura. I kind of like Liger having this belt. He has a name, and so all I can do is, you know, it's good for a change, get the belts off the same old group. But, you know, and I enjoy the psychology of the faces attacking before the bell. Face is just, they're just beating the crap out of them. And then setting up heat on Tiger Mask. Liger finally gets a hot tag. But I will say that I thought the finish felt really flat. I give it 2.5 stars. I mean, it was good, solid stuff, but, you know, it wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination. And, it was more about getting heat on the baby faces than having a blowaway match, in my opinion. What was your thought?
Yeah, I gave it 2.25. I'm with you. Good action, fun stuff. I thought both teams were really good at what they were doing, especially the Suzuki-Gun team getting the heat. I thought was great. Desperado is just criminally underappreciated, I think.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to have a lot to say about most of the undercard, honestly. But like I said, the match, most of the matches were good, except for the next match. But most of them I enjoyed and actually was more interested in than I have been in the past of New Japan undercards.
We're going to talk about next match, Makabe and Hanma versus Juice and who is it?
Juice and Hanare.
Hanare, that's it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I thought... Juice was good. Hanare was very minimal, but you know, Makabe is Makabe. Obviously, you know, we've talked about him enough. But you talked about Hanma always feeling like he's on the verge to break out. But here, I mean, he's like on the verge of breaking down. It feels like he's just not quite.
Well, he's coming back from being laid out for what, a year, year and a half.
Yeah, exactly. So I mean, there's definitely going to be a lot of ring rust there, but. You know, it's just not there yet, and we'll see if he comes back soon enough after shaking off the ring rust, here relatively quickly. But yeah, I gave, like I said, star and a half, not into it. Realistic.
Yeah, I went 2.25. I didn't hate it quite as much as you, but yeah, I mean, it was just kind of there. Then we got who we got here? We got Fale, we got Ishimori, we got who else is in this match? I can't even read my writing. But it's versus the Young Bucks, Owens and Paige. You know, it was all action, fun match, a bunch of moves, bunch of big moves. But, you know, not nothing, nothing, you know, amazing. But I give it 3.25. I thought it was a good change of pace type match, really picked up the pacing. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on. I think that they did a good job kind of having some chaoticness to it.
Oh, yeah, it was Gorillas of Destiny was in it. I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah. It was Bullet Club versus Bullet Club, right? Yeah. I gave it 3-star. Yeah, I thought good action.
Well, they renamed the Young Bucks team to Golden... What do they call it? Oh, the Golden Lovers Elite. Golden Elite. Yeah.
I thought that there was a lot of good action, and... And like you said, it felt like it was changing the pace of the card overall. Really cool stuff. Chase Owens looked pretty good throughout, honestly, which is good from possibly elevating him. But yeah, for me, it's just a 3-star.
And the next match, we got Ishii, Goto, and Ospreay versus Suzuki, Ishikawa, and Taichi. This is one of my favorite matches on the show. I think it might have been my favorite match on the show. I give it 3.75. Thought it was a big fight. I thought it had a lot of heat. It's very chaotic. Everybody had a chance to shine in it. Really good stuff. What about you?
Yeah, I give it 3.5. I thought this was a lot of fun, a lot of great action. Multiple threads going on throughout, playing off the different titles and the challenges and everything. My only issue is that the match before had the Never Trios titles in it, and then you got this Trios match here where it feels like everything about it is just about the singles matches and singles titles that they're going to. And this is a bummer because when we talked about the Trios titles getting debuted, I remember saying like it could help these Trios matches feel more important because they have something they could go for. And the Chaos team feels like a cool team that could be treated like they would matter as Trios, but those belts are just such tokens. But this match didn't really suffer because of that, but it did it just made me bummed out about that fact, and not necessarily didn't really hurt the match, though. The match was still great, and the match still felt like it had cool build and importance going on because of the singles stuff. So the match was awesome. But yeah, that just that quirk of the booking kind of annoys me, because those titles just seem so pointless. It's like, God, why even have them? It seems like every time they're just like, whoever has the tag titles also has the Trios titles with someone else, and they're never treated like the Trios titles matter.
Fair enough.
But yeah.
Then we got this Naito video package, and And then that led us to Naito and Bushi and Sonata and the debuting Shingo versus Yo and Sho, Okada and Yano. What do you think about this?
This was really, really fun stuff. I wish that they had like kind of showed off the Shingo a little bit more. His stuff when he was in was really cool, and obviously he gets the win, so I think that their idea was just that his focus would be the finish more. But I wish he had gotten some more shine throughout. It did feel a little bit too spot, like guys just going in and out to hit their little segment and leave. So that just felt like a little bit too kind of rushed.
Felt like
there.
very formatic New Japan tag.
Yeah, so I gave it 2 3/4, and mostly like I would probably be a lot lower, but the Shingo kind of newness was cool, so hopefully that'll help carry forward a little bit longer.
Yeah, I gave it 3 stars. I think that was because of Naito's Lando Calrissian style cape. I thought was awesome. I like the heels getting the heat early on. Dragon screw by Yo sets up a hot tag, and that was an all-action sprint. You know, it wasn't necessarily long or anything. But I'm kind of with you on Shingo. It seems like they said, oh, yeah, we'll get him over by giving him the win. But they forgot maybe you need him to do some cool shit in there, too, while you're at it. And that led us right into Zack Sabre Jr. and Evil, because Evil comes out for the save. And Jericho attacks him. You know, Jericho's pretty damn good at these creative angles. And this is another one, but they get diminishing returns because it's the same angle, pretty much, but it just presented differently. This time he's dressed up as a Naito fan as opposed to dressed up as Pentagon at All In or whatever he was, or Kenny Omega, whatever he was, the other one. But it was a good heated angle, and he got over. And I thought Zach was great picking up the carcass at the end, being a real chicken shit. So I thought the segment played real well. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it was great. I guess my only upset was that we didn't get the Zach Evil match. That would have probably been kind of cool, but the angle was done really well. And it's not something, like you talked about, Jericho has done the dress-up thing a bit, but the way that he did it here, it's not something New Japan does, where they advertise a match, even set up a match, and then it doesn't happen at all. So you get big credit off of that, because it's an angle that's unique in that way.
True. Then we got Kushida versus Marty Scurll. You know, I enjoyed it. Gave it 3.5. It felt like, you know, it just felt, at times it felt like they were telling a story, but then other times they got away and got more into their spots as opposed to not making sense. But overall it was good, but it was utterly frustrating because it could have been so much better. What was your thoughts here?
I liked it. I gave it 3.25. I really enjoyed the dueling limb work. I was impressed with Scurll here more than I have been in a long time, because he really kind of kept some of his bullshit pretty minimal. Kushida's selling was great. Commentary mentioning Kushida as kind of the Okada of the junior division, I thought was good, and really, I had never really thought about it that way, but yeah, farming him out around the world to have all these showcase matches everywhere. He is meant to be the showcase of the New Japan Junior Division in that way. So that kind of really helped up the ante for me on this. Like I said, dueling limb work from both guys was great. Teasing for the Back to the Future multiple times I thought was good. Scurll teasing his kind of, I don't know, what it, I guess it's graduation. It looks like a package brain buster. I don't know.
I think it's a lame name, I'll tell you that.
Yeah. Just the whole thing. Kind of going off, I thought was done pretty well in general. I don't know if I liked the Kushida double finish, hitting the Back of the Future twice kind of finish. I felt like that was a little gratuitous, honestly. But I didn't like completely hate it. And it was like probably the best Marty Scurll match I've seen in a very long time.
All right. Then we got Ta-Nehisi versus Jay White. What was your feel on this one?
Jay White was looking great as a heel opening up, playing with the leg, doing the air guitar, I think has been a popular staple. Just destroying the leg repeatedly throughout the match, I thought was really good. Didn't feel forced as much as it did. I think it was they had another match that really didn't, was early on in Jay White's kind of heel run with this. Jay White felt a lot shakier there. He feels a lot more confident here, taking it slow. He's able to not, yeah, just feel like he's doing it because he's being told to. It feels like it makes sense for him and his character to kind of take his time and work Ta-Nehisi over. Tana, and I pointed it out on the show before, and I don't know, I've never heard anybody say it before. I don't think I'm like the world's number one most novel person who comes up with these great things that no one's ever said, but love the way Ta-Nehisi always goes for the tit for tat. It just, again, it feels very schoolyard kind of mentality of like, you hurt my leg, I hurt yours.
Yeah, revenge spots, man. That's what wrestling was built on.
Yeah, and he does it so well. I mean, it becomes his driving focus. If you go after his knee, it's everything about him from then on is going to be about destroying yours. But he's just so, you know, broken down and old at this point that he doesn't have it in him to be able to do it. So his knee is fucked up. He's limping around the whole way. The crowd loves him. And this Ta-Nehisi resurgence has been amazing. I mean, I know that there's people who are thinking about this, and I'm seriously debating, like, could Ta-Nehisi be my wrestler of the year? Like, it's almost there. Unfortunately, he's got the New Japan issue, which is that there's just not enough big-time singles matches.
Yeah.
But he's got a lot of really good ones already this year.
He does.
And this resurgence for him has been amazing. I mean, the guy is on another level as one of the all-time greats this year. I mean, he's really showing it.
And his G1 was strong.
Yeah, his G1 was strong all the way through, on top of good matches, great storytelling. Just really good stuff. Like I said, Jay White's feeling more comfortable, but you gotta know some of that's Ta-Nehisi, because this is the Ta-Nehisi formula. The first match he has with someone's not very good, then he figures him out, he has a better match, and then finally he has the big, you know, usually the big blow-off match that's like great. It's the way that he structures his match series is. And it's, you know, it works really well with New Japan's structure. That's why he's the ace of New Japan, because he intentionally sets up his matches to fit with the way New Japan storytelling and matches work. People love the big histrionics, the history of the builds of the competitions, and he inherently puts that building crescendo of storyline from match to match so well. In every match, even against opponents that you don't necessarily know, like Okada, it became a big thing, obviously. But like, he didn't know that the same thing was going to necessarily happen with Jay White when they had the first match. It could have just been one and done, and Jay White could have flamed out, but he still puts in that the background story work. I really, really enjoyed the match. That said, probably, you know, didn't think it was amazing. I gave it 3.5 also, that's pretty good, and it was really good, I thought, and especially compared to their last match that, I mean, people were like really, really saying it was like a dud and stuff. And the post-match stuff with Okada, you already talked about, but it's great. I think that tag team could definitely, you know, draw a huge house if they put them together for a big match. It could possibly help, you know, revitalize the tag division being treated important. You got the Golden Lovers, but they've been kind of helping with that too. You got the Young Bucks, but if Okada and Ta-Nehisi want to tag up for a while and, like you said, get a run with the tag belts, I don't think the tag titles could feel any more important than if they did something like that.
Yep. I'm with you. I give it 3.5. I loved how White clipped Ta-Nehisi while Gato was you know, gaining his attention. Real methodical. You constantly were able to follow the story. Love White constantly shortcutting Ta-Nehisi by going after the leg. Love Ta-Nehisi returning the favor with the Dragon Screw. A lot of tropes stand up here. A little bit overbooked. Post-match breakdown. Okada saves Ta-Nehisi. Okada gets Gato. Bull Club OG lay out Okada. White, Gato, Jado join Bull Club OG. But, you know, the Ta-Nehisi-Okada tag team could have a lot of legs. You know, I use Steamboat Flair. Piper Hogan is another example. You know, your top stars, Hogan Savage. It could mean something, so we'll keep a close eye on that. Then the main event was Omega versus Bushi versus Cody Rhodes. I don't know. I give it 3.25. It felt a little over, felt choreographed at times. I just don't know. It didn't really click for me big time. Felt like there was a lot of big moves. I don't know. This is not a Cody Rhodes special, since he's a singles guy as opposed to doing the tag work. But it was all right. 3.25. What about you? What do you think?
It's funny that we got back-to-back three-ways in big main event spots that the guys just don't seem to have the three-way charisma. It's almost like three-way matches aren't really very good. Very trope-tastic with the three-way stuff, to the, you know, sending the guy to the floor. I mean, instantly in the opening, it's like, let's do a three-way Roman knuckle lock or whatever, test of strength, and then even in it, just throw the guy to the floor and then break it down to two. You know, none of these guys, you talk about not a Cody special, I mean, none of these guys are really very good at three-way matches, or just like multi-guy matches too, like tag matches primarily, or you know, the thing in singles matches. New Japan doesn't really do a lot of like three-ways and stuff like that, so they're out of practice. Like, even though Kenny and Ibushi come from DDT, where there's a history of multi-band matches with a bunch of guys and stuff, sometimes I think more than three is easier than three guys. A lot of times it feels like a three-way is like the hardest match to try to do, just because of the way the numbers work off in that regard. So it felt like there was some times where it felt like Kenny and Ibushi were working as if it was a tag match, so there was just so much working together between them. Really disappointed, honestly. I was expecting a lot more. I wanted a better match. And it really disappointed as the main event after the Tanahashi match was so good for me. The teasing stuff with the chair and all that and Cody was a little bit much. And Cody just doesn't fit. Like, it doesn't make any sense that Cody is in the group with these guys. It really feels like he should be in the other group. And you talk about the other group missing an ace. Like, I do kind of feel like Cody could feel like the ace of the Bullet Club OGs guys, really. A lot better than anyone they have. I mean, he's still not super over in the Japanese crowds, but he's more over than he used to be. And I did think the finish was weird, just because you would think that you'd still be kind of saving up the Ibushi Omega matchups and finishes and pins and stuff more, especially when you have someone else there who could take the pin. I just didn't quite get that. I gave it 2.75 star. I really would have expected a lot more from these guys, honestly. And I really did expect a lot more from these guys, because all three guys are very good. I mean, you know, they're all guys that I like, so I would expect a better match from them.
Fair enough. You know, overall, it comes back to the booking, so we'll see where that goes, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We'll see where we end up, but hopefully somewhere good. But the booking is interesting. You talked about big risks, and like I said, the matches on the undercard I cared more about than I used to, so the booking is feeling positive. We'll see how they go moving forward.
All right, man. On that note, do you have anything you want to plug?
No, just follow me on Twitter @LuchaUndead.
Yeah, follow me on Twitter at Titans O Wrestling. Have a great week, and we'll be back in 2 weeks. Later.
Stay awake when I'm sleep, 'cause everything is never as it seems. 'Cause I get 1,000.